The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
You don't produce a Kieran Kilkenny or an Oisín Mullen. You don't produce them overnight. They take time, takes a lot of work, massive loss for his club, but he's meant for professional sport.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
So we've already done the back pages for you, as we'll get to rugby. Alan Quinlan is with us this morning. Alan, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, lads. How are you?
That Munster situation that they find themselves in at the moment is pretty tricky. Are you hearing anything from anybody on the ground?
No, not really. I was as shocked as everybody else that it's a disaster, really, for them, isn't it? Pretty difficult that they, you know, they should have been playing a match at the weekend and playing next weekend, and now they find themselves kind of stuck there and possibly facing a quarantine period when they come home. So it really makes it very, very difficult for them. And I suppose with the other, Cardiff Blues have a similar situation. They have two positive cases in their camp, so they're stranded in South Africa as well. Zebra and the Scarlets got on a flight yesterday, and they're probably home at this stage. So it's a really tricky situation for them, and one that I'm sure concerns them a lot.
Well, Nathan's pointing out as well, it's going to have more than likely a knock-on impact for the Champions Cup as well.
Yeah, well, it just depends now at this stage what happens. If they can get out in the next day or two, maybe they can do the 10-day isolation and go to Wasps and play the match. Obviously, in a situation that's going to be really tricky with if they have to do quarantine periods. You know, I was thinking about this. Do they do it somewhere where they can actually train together and stay in a bubble and actually prepare for the match? Or do they all go home or stay in, you know, or do they stay in a hotel somewhere where they have no training facilities and they can't get outside the door? If they could get back and train as a group, maybe they can go and play that match. But they've got to get back in the next day or two, really. And if that positive case is... Did they leave that person behind? I don't know what happens. It's absolutely crazy, because if they have to go into quarantine for 10 days and it's later in the week, well, you know, they play, is it Sunday week that game is, or Sunday 2 weeks? It just makes it really, really difficult for them. It's Sunday week. So it's a really crazy situation. Maybe that game will get postponed against Wasps and they play it another time. I don't know. They'll need help from URC. But look, they're in a situation that's probably out of their control now at the moment. And Cardiff are the same. They play Toulouse at home on the Saturday week. They're in a similar situation.
Yeah, it's such a shame, because we were really looking forward to actually seeing the matches where the Irish teams went up against the best of the South African teams. We've obviously seen the weaker South African teams over the last couple of years in the league, but this was the first opportunity that we had to see what looked like a full-strength Munster team up against a full-strength South African side, and kind of really test ourselves against their best. So we'll obviously keep a close eye on that story, and we'll update everybody on otbsports.com as it evolves and as we get more information from Munster. But let's talk about the actual rugby that was played on the field. Pardon me, Ulster beat Leinster. And I know that the game ends on an intercept, but Ulster were full value for this win, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. I think the way they started the game, they were full of intent, and you just got the feeling that there was a real fear about their performance, and that fear of not being able to beat Leinster and deal with them. They've come close a couple of times, I think, but there was a couple of big wins in the last number of years. They haven't won there in 8 years. They're coming on the back of Connacht destroyed them in Dublin the last time they played. I was surprised. I think lots of people were surprised, and maybe Leinster just thought they were going to turn up, which we don't really associate that with Leinster. They're usually very, very ruthless, but Ulster were full value for that win, I think. Their breakdown, their defence, their work rate was through the roof, and they deserved that win. I think when Robbie Henshaw scores a try and then they level the match with a penalty, you're thinking the inevitable is going to happen here. But to be fair to Ulster, that was a real big step for them as a group. I think to be that mentally tough and to keep going and to react. And, you know, it was the 78th minute he gets the intercept try, James Hume. So it was, it wasn't as if it was, you know, the 10 or 15 minutes and they stretched out to 10 points again. I think their performance was brilliant. Can they back it up now? We've seen some performances from Ulster like that in the last number of years, but they've been very inconsistent at times. Leo Cullen was very frustrated, I think, but very honest in his appraisal after the game that it wasn't good enough from Leinster. And it's a big moment. If Ulster can capitalise on this and build on this, you know, they have to go to Clermont in Europe and then home to Northampton. So they've a real big couple of weeks. They're away at the Ospreys next weekend. So can they build on this? That's the question.
It's rare to see and hear Leo Cullen, as peeved as he was after the game, talking about there'd been a lot of hype around this team and a sense that maybe they were a little bit complacent. We saw this group go to Dragons and maybe one of Leinster's worst performances in years earlier in the season, that we all just expect this Leinster conveyor belt to complete delivering performances, and maybe that somehow seeped into the squad as well.
It's possible, Nathan, and it can happen. Everybody can kind of have you know, one of those off days. As I said, you don't really see it that much from Leinster. They've scored the most, conceded the least in the league up to this point. They've been very, bar that Dragons match, as you said, where it was a poor performance. And maybe it's a mental thing. And he did say that. I thought it was really interesting that maybe some of the players believed the hype. Very, very strong Leinster side. I was surprised with the likes of Tadhg Furlong starting the game. You know, but look, there's obviously a plan for this next block, and they manage the players like that. And I'm sure Furlong wanted to start, and they probably needed him to start because Alatoa was away with Samoa. But yeah, mentally, it looked like they left it too late to react. But then they had periods in the game where they looked like they'd score, and they looked like the inevitable would happen. But credit to Ulster, you know, Timoney, Alan O'Connor, these guys, they just put in so many tackles. James Hume was brilliant in the centre. And like I said, it can be bad mentally. And mentally, we're talking about Leinster maybe switching off a little bit here. And sometimes you can change that out on the field over the 80 minutes. But when you lose the match, you can look back at maybe things that happen in training and maybe just being a little bit relaxed going into the game, even if it's only a couple of percent. But the real key here is Ulster for them. Can they build on this and get consistency and have that kind of steely edge about them? We've questioned their kind of their tenacity and their aggression for a long number of years now. And chalk and cheese, the performance, wasn't it? You know, Connacht destroyed them a few weeks ago, and we're full value for that. And that was a strong Leinster side. I know they're missing a few and they have the depth to make a lot of changes. It was a strong Leinster side.
It was. Like, you know, while there are some players who are missing, it's still a side that in the past would have played in a Champions Cup game. And you would have been like, oh, that's their first choice scrum half. And that, so Sexton's injured. So, okay, Ross Byrne is playing, but he's playing well for Ireland. Do you know, like around 18 months ago, that team that took the field wouldn't have been a million miles away from a starting side, and they just weren't at the pitch against Ulster. You mentioned Hume. I want to go back to him because one of the papers is talking about he's one of the players who was disappointed not to get game time, and who Andy Farrell would have told, you need to go make sure that it's not even up for debate whether or not you're getting picked. Is he that close to playing for Ireland at this stage? Is he that good?
He has serious talent. I think he's one of the players that, you know, if you're going to go on and play for Ireland, you've got to step up in the big games consistently. He's still learning, but I think he has the talent. I thought it was an opportunity lost not trying to get him game time, because I believe he has the ability to step up. He has the talent anyway, to step up to that level and play for Ireland.
And what are his skill sets? So tell us.
He's an incredibly balanced runner. I think he's an intelligent footballer as well, and just a real natural kind of runner with the ball. Does he need to be more aggressive and defensively? Yes. You know, you look at Henshaw, what makes Henshaw so good is, you know, even without the ball, just the aggression, the ability to get turnovers, impact tackles at the top level, you know, for James Hume. I think he needs to be more aggressive, stronger, with the ball, without the ball. So I think the natural skills is something that he's brilliant at. It's the other parts of his game that take you to the next level. And that takes a little bit of time. You know, he's a silky kind of a footballer. He can step outside you. He can run hard. He's a lot of pace.
Is he depth for Gary Ringrose then? Is that what we're...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he is. And, you know, you look at Ringrose, the way he's developed into a really physical player now. Gary Ringrose, when he came on the scene first, was this silky runner who was a little bit light, maybe. You look at Gary Ringrose now, he's still only 26, but he's a physical specimen. He's after getting a lot stronger. He's really aggressive in the tackle. He's hard when he has to carry into traffic, stuff like that. They're small little things that hopefully will come to James Hume. But look, it's early days for him. And I'm not saying that he should have been playing for Ireland, but I think he's someone that has the ability to play for Ireland, and he has a natural ability. So hopefully he can perform well for Ulster now and get that opportunity again going forward. But just develop his game more and have a real presence on the field in the big games.
While we've all obviously been sort of salivating over the international team's performances in the November internationals, that probably wasn't the case around the provinces. And I wonder how much Ulster and maybe all the provinces have a bit of a chip on their shoulder with the Leinster representation and needing to prove a point, because Dan McFarlane made a funny enough comment earlier in the week when he was asked, how do you beat Leinster? And he said, don't ask the All Blacks, which is a great line. And James Hume was talking about the Irish situation and how he's looking at this now as a 9-week block ahead of the Six Nations, that maybe there was a bit of shock among some of the players outside of Leinster that they didn't get the opportunities they thought they might get, and they need to use that and harness that now over the Christmas.
Yeah, but look, none of them can have any complaints, Nathan. The Leinster players that played for Ireland throughout the block were outstanding. And let's not kid ourselves here for any Leinster people watching it. You know, you've Porter, Doris, Sexton, Ringrose, Kelleher. They're top-class internationals that are missing for, you know, Hugo Keenan wasn't there. So there's...
James Lowe.
There's six... James Lowe. There's seven or eight...
Van der Fleer,
internationals
Doris,
there, you know. That, yeah. Yeah, you just keep going, don't you? You just keep going.
Row.
Yeah, but look, you put those guys, they're at a different level at the moment. But Gerard said it, you know, these are the games that Leinster were able to win over the years. So, you know, it was probably close enough to a full strength side. I think, you know, Henderson is missing, obviously, for Ulster, and they've one or two others, Stockdale. But Leinster can do that, and they've done it over the years. Yeah. None of the provinces can have any complaints about the Leinster players that played for Ireland, because, as I said, they were outstanding. And maybe it's given them that little bit of chip that, you know. But look, Leinster have been a dominant side for years, so anytime anyone plays them now, they have to cope with that intensity and that relentlessness from the opposition.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Leo Cullen referred to it as a kick up the ass, and it'll be interesting to see exactly how many of those players he goes back to in the big moments over the next couple of weeks, in particular when those big games are coming thick and fast. Let's talk about Connacht, because the Connacht season has been a bit stop-start at the very start, and even within games they were brilliant for 15-20 minutes, but they couldn't put the performances together consistently, and then week on, week off, there was a real concern that they were going to be able to do it. And then the build-up to this game, reading Andy Friend talking about it, he was talking about the quality of the opposition, and so I think he was putting his team on notice, and he was putting everybody else on notice that, like, if we aren't at it, then we're going to go back to the lack of consistency that has been there all season. And it was the opposite. They put in their best performance of the season, building on a performance against Ulster the previous week in unbelievably shitty conditions, which, if you're a Connacht fan, must make you very excited. Like, what they did on Friday was sensational.
It's the way they play, isn't it? And I think that ambition to keep the ball alive, to put the ball through hands, their lines are running, their shape is really good. They've won three, lost three, so it's not the best return for them. A couple of brilliant performances, and that Ulster one was the last time. And this one was very impressive. because of the conditions, the weather was horrendous on Friday night. The Ospreys aren't the strongest side, let's be honest about it. But they were ruthless, and the tries they scored and the dominance they showed was sensational. I think Mack Hansen has been a great signing for him. Brilliant footballer, has a real eye for scoring tries, and Shane Bolton got a really good try as well. So they have a lot of natural footballers, and Andy Friend has recruited pretty well with those guys. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of impact and how often Shane Bolton will play. Will he end up playing at 10 some matches? He was 13 the other night, and he was really good. But the fullback, Aaron McNulty, I tell you, he got a brilliant try, and overall his performance, he just looked electric. He looked electric at fullback, pace, looking for the gap the whole time, just a natural kind of wanting to run with the ball. I thought he was really impressive as well. So it was a brilliant performance for them, and that's the way they can play. If you allow Connacht to play, you know, the old tag of stuff it up the jumper is gone 10 years ago. You know, this is the way Connacht play now. This is the way they want to play. They want to keep the ball alive. Conor Oliver was brilliant. Paul Boyle, just constantly guys looking for the ball, and they have a brilliant work rate. So I just think the execution in those conditions the other night was really, really impressive.
A couple of things, right? So I'm just checking McNulty's birthday there. Born in January 2000. So he's only 21. That's pretty exciting if you're a Connacht fan. And then a couple of the other ones you're talking about as well. So Shane Bolton. How far away is Bolton from playing for Ireland? How far away is Mack Hansen from being something that, like Andy Friend obviously brought him into the, Andy Farrell obviously brought him into the squad to have a look, and that might have just been a curiosity, like, let's see what this guy has for a couple of training sessions, and maybe he was never near getting game time, but all of a sudden there's players there that the Ireland selectors are going to watch and going, how will they fit into our setup? Well, they're playing our style of rugby and they're very comfortable in it, so we can get them in and see how it goes.
They're just good footballers, Ger, and I think that's if you can get natural footballers into your team. Obviously, their backs. I don't know where Shane Bolton sits, but obviously, with the RFU and with Connacht, they've identified a guy who can potentially go and play for Ireland here. He's still very young as well. He's Irish qualified. Mack Hansen the same. Aaron McNulty was born in the UK, but his dad is from Cork, so he's in the Connacht Academy. So there are three guys there, I think, that are very exciting to watch. I just love when you see players with a ball in their hands and their first instinct is, how can I beat someone? How can I go at my opposite number? I want to run with the ball. Obviously, that doesn't always happen, and sometimes you have to kick the ball. But I just think, talking about Mack Hansen, I just like that he's a real natural footballer. His all-round game is very, very good. And, you know, you mentioned Andy Farrell brought him into the Irish squad. This is a guy that could play for Ireland and isn't a million miles away. And he's shown his quality with the tries he's scoring for Connacht. So really, really good signing. You know, it's hard to judge Shane Bolton the other night off what we saw, but he looks a balanced runner. He looks strong and he looks like he can play. And McNulty, as I said, at fullback, you know, wanted to join that line in attack and run hard. They're exciting players and they're good footballers that fit the style of the way Andy Friend wants to play. And they're three guys that could go on and play for Ireland.
And they've got that surety now with Jack Hartley as well, the new three-year contract, meaning they can sort of plan for the future with him there. And I thought his interview with Joe was interesting, of sort of the maturity he now seems to have, where we're always talking about Jack Hartley, he should be this, he should be that, and sort of taking it on his own shoulders that actually the reason he wasn't involved after the last World Cup was he went back to Connacht and he just didn't play well enough. I think he'd actually lost his place for a couple of the Champions Cup games. That, like, Hartley, over the next two or three years, we hope, will force his way into a World Cup squad. But he, and having him at top form, could elevate Connacht to a whole other level.
Yeah, and look, it's Nathan, if the Connacht forwards get enough of quality ball and they match the opposition or beat the opposition forward pack, and you give Carty good quality ball, he's a brilliant player. He's a brilliant footballer. He makes mistakes, though, and I think that's the issue for him. And that was the issue since the World Cup. Consistent performances, doing the simple things really well. We know he's a natural kind of flair runner who is exciting, wants to attack with the ball. But you've got to do the basics really well as a fly half. Read the game, kick in the right areas, bring other people into the game, defend strong. So there's things still to improve for Jack Carty, and he has that natural flair and ability. And I'm talking about a lot of these players who have that. But, you know, referring to Robbie Henshaw again, Ringrose, Damien Diolinde, top-class international players, it's that when you don't have the ball, there's small little things you see from an international player that separates them. It's that ruthless defensive edge that they have. It's that ability to go in and attack the breakdown. Not everybody can do that because of their size, but it's just been really rock solid in those parts and those moments that, you know, as a fly half, you're going to be attacked. The opposition are going to try and target you. And, you know, for Jack Carty, you know, he can't put on 10 kilos and be a big bashing out half, but small things just needs to improve. And it's consistency, and that comes with confidence as well. So he's a confidence player, and it's a brilliant move for Connacht that he signed a new 3-year contract.
Before we let you go, Quinny, I don't think we've spoken to you about your Roy Keane dinner. It's always a worrying thing when you pick up the paper. I'd imagine on Sunday morning Roy Keane has done a feature length interview and you get a mention, but he did bring up a dinner with yourself and Rog and Paul O'Connell after he was spending some time with the All Blacks, and Roger's name obviously came up quite a bit and how they were going to target him. What are your memories of dinner with Roy Keane?
Excellent. It was brilliant. We had great fun, great chats. You know, obviously he gets portrayed as this ruthless kind of non-friendly person at times, and it was the complete opposite. He just completely opened up to us, and he was more keen and interested in how we were preparing for playing the All Blacks. He'd been in Cardiff to see us in the Heineken Cup final against Toulouse. He'd been in the Munster squad a couple of times over the years, so I think he was pretty relaxed with us, and we weren't asking him stupid questions and annoying him. He was the one who instigated the dinner. He told a lie that we tried to pay for the dinner. But I kind of snuck out on behalf of the group that was there, the lads, and he already had the dinner paid for. So it was very nice of him, but it was a lovely kind of intimate chat for probably 2 hours in Wellington in 2008. And obviously there's a real intrigue, and the boys try to set me up with him then, saying that I was a Liverpool fan and that I was a friend of Niall Quinn.
All of which is true, yeah.
But they were trying to create this narrative that I was anti-Roy Keane in 2002 when he left the World Cup, and that so they tried that, but he just laughed that off. But it was really interesting because he was great company. It was really brilliant. And I had actually a chat with him a couple of years after that. We did an event in the Aviva Stadium, and we were staying at the Herbert Park Hotel. He left early, but he said to me, call in to me when you come back. And I remember going back to the hotel thinking, did he actually say, give him a shout in his room? I was trying to think about it in reception. And then I asked the girl in reception, would she ring his room and see, did he actually tell me to call up? And this was about 11 o'clock on a Wednesday night. And he picked up the phone and said, Jack, come up. Knocked on his door. He was chatting to his wife on the phone and gestured for me to come in. And I ended up sitting there for two hours with him chatting on my own. And so I've had chats with him, and I just think he's phenomenal, really. He is paranoid at times, and he openly says, you know, he struggles in big groups and big people harassing him, annoying him, and it's a different world for him. But it was intriguing having those chats and being in a relaxed situation and actually feeling that he's relaxed and he's the one asking you questions. So that was really interesting, yeah, for sure.
All right, good stuff, Quinny. We'll leave it there for today. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.